God has really blessed me. You know, he let me work in D.C., let me work with EIB in Hollywood, in Silicon Valley. And he's shown me through all those experiences that there is one problem and one solution, and that's why we do this show.
Welcome to A Disciple's View with Todd Herman.
When the God of the universe created the world, he didn't snap his fingers or wink his eye. The Lord spoke. He said, let there be light. Because we believe, we speak about the happenings in this world as we remain mindful that our true home is with Jesus Christ and his kingdom. Welcome to A Disciple's View. I haven't paused often enough to just stop and say thank you. We get emails, and often it's Jonathan, who works behind the scenes, his leadership here, just does a great job of stewarding these airwaves. Will send me notes from you, and I get them through my own website, thetoddhermanshow.com, and you express such kind thoughts about the program. You are so kind in the way you challenge me, and the fact that you tune in and make it part of what you do. I want you to know something in relation to live radio that's so different from podcasting, because I spend most of my time podcasting. This is going to sound very strange, but I can feel you there. I really can. And it's a feeling of my heart being full. And I know what it's like to need a friend, to have friends who will stand by you through things. And I know what it's like to not feel that. I want you to know that I feel you there. And there's something unbelievably special about this invention of airwaves that God created. That the scientific basis for what we're doing was pre-seen by God, as all things are. The fact that I can speak words that go through the AFR HQ and satellites distributed throughout the country, 180 stations, it does create a human connection that does not exist in podcasting. It simply doesn't. Or even if I pre-record a segment of this program, it's not the same. I mean, I know you're going to hear it, but I'm picturing you having made the decision to tune in. And I need to tell you, if I allowed myself, I could become cheerful about that. I could. I'm walking with a friend through something where she's really going to need friends. And she's already had friends turn their backs on her. I know what it's like to have someone turn their back on you. And so to picture you making the decision to tune in, just let me tell you that I appreciate it. I know Randy does. I know the team at AFR does. As I began to speak, I just realized I have not properly thanked you in too long. You matter a lot, not just financially, but by virtue of your attention. So let's talk. The New York Times cannot help itself. Occasionally, they commit accidental acts of journalism. The other day, they stole a story from Alex Berenson about the Parkinson's expert who was making his way to the White House 8 times. Alex learned about it from the New York Post. He credited him that. In his piece, he said the New York Post reported one visit. Berenson then did what good reporters do, is he went and followed up and found 7 other visits. He broke that story. The New York Times stole it, didn't give Berenson credit, despite the fact that Alex used to work there, I think for a couple of decades, worked at the New York Times. But because Alex Berenson chose to speak truth about COVID, he has been non-persons in respectable media. And the New York Times can't help itself. This is them covering the death of Robert C. Byrd. Robert C. Byrd, a pillar of the Senate, dies at 92. What else was he? I forget the title he had with the Ku Klux Klan. Was it a Grand Wizard? I don't think it was that. It was something else. But he was with the Ku Klux Klan, a dear friend of figurehead Biden, by the way. Edward M. Kennedy, Senate stalwart, is dead at 77. So what else do we know about Ted Kennedy? Well, I remember this. There was a horrific story about how he and Chris Dodd, having drinks in a D.C. eating establishment back in, I guess, sort of a private room, a young woman working as a waitress trying, as I recall, to work her way through college. Chris Dodd and Edward Kennedy, according to this article, stood up and one man got behind her, the other man in front of her, and they pulled her between them. They called it a waitress sandwich. New York Times, Edward Kennedy, Senate stalwart, is dead at 77. Here's how they covered the death of Senator Imhoff, James Imhoff. James M. Inhofe, senator who denied climate change, dies at 89. The only senator they could find room to criticize upon his death is a man who denied what they call climate change. They can't help themselves. Even George Stephanopoulos could not help the figurehead.
What's your plan to turn the campaign around?
Start today. How many people you get to draw crowds like I did today? You find me more enthusiastic than today? Huh?
I mean, I don't think you want to play the crowd game. Donald Trump can draw big crowds. There's no question about that.
He can draw a big crowd, but what does he say? Who does he have? I'm the guy supposedly in trouble.
You often are forced to hold your events in half of gyms of high schools. Sometimes you hold them in classrooms. President Trump is quite capable of filling NASCAR-sized crowds, football, NCAA football-sized crowds. He is. Figurehead Biden can't help himself. He doesn't see what's going on. I don't think they let him see it. Mike Johnson, Speaker Johnson, I was talking earlier about how kind people are when they write to me and they challenge me. There are a few audience members who are deeply offended and find it worrisome that I criticize Speaker Johnson. Speaker Johnson sees what's coming, but I don't think he's willing to do anything about it. He's on Twitter talking about the SAVE Act. And this is what he or someone on his staff posted on Twitter for him. The SAVE Act will safeguard our elections by ensuring only American citizens vote in federal elections. Here's what the legislation does. Let's pause. This is not going to pass. Mike Johnson had a chance to attach this to the most important issue in the world, which is, of course, Ukraine. That's the most important issue in the world, Ukraine. He had an opportunity to attach this to aid to Israel, which I think is legitimately very important, biblically so. He had a chance to attach this to budgets. He didn't. He won't. He then discusses the legislation, and there are some key phrases I'd like you to really focus on. Requires state election officials to ask about citizenship before providing voter registration forms. Okay, to ask. Requires an individual to provide proof of citizenship in order to register to vote in federal elections. Okay, so proof. Allows state officials to accept a wide variety of documents that will make it easy for citizens to register to vote in elections. Okay, fair enough. Listen very closely to this. Provides states with access to federal agency databases so they can remove non-citizens from voter rolls and confirm citizenship to individuals lacking proof of citizenship. Let's hear that again. Provides states with access to federal agency databases. Oh, so they can access them. They can remove non-citizens from voter rolls. They can confirm citizenship for people who lack proof of citizenship. How? This directs the Department of Homeland Security to determine whether to conduct removal proceedings if a non-citizen has been identified as having registered to vote in federal elections. Directs the Department of Homeland Security to determine it? The same Department of Homeland Security who lets people go all the time, though they are arrested and found to have been murderers and rapists in their countries of origin? That Department of Homeland Security? Run by the impeached, disgraced Angelino Mayorkas, who is orchestrating the invasion of the country? Requires Department of Homeland Security to notify a state election chief official whenever an individual has been naturalized to ensure our newest citizens are able to exercise their right to vote. So it requires the Department of Homeland Security to notify. It directs the Department of Homeland Security to decide whether to deport someone, but it requires them to get new voters added to the rolls. Mike Johnson loves Jesus, no doubt. I just don't think he trusts Jesus. I don't. Because if he trusted the Lord Jesus fully, I think he would look at the scope of the game here and say, you know what? I'm not going to allow theft on a grand scale. I'm going to put this into legislation, and I'm going to force Democrats to allow this. Anything else is going to lead to a massive, massive theft. If you don't believe me, listen to this. This guy's controversial. I get it. Jovian Pulitzer, understand the controversy behind him. Yeah, but according to him and his data, apparently approximately 10,000 illegal aliens using the same exact Social Security number voted in the November 3, 2020 election in Arizona.
We discovered 10,000 people using the exact Social Security number. See if this one rings true. You take an illegal, you bring them in. They sign a piece of paper promising to pay taxes. What they get is a Social Security number. So the employers can take out the taxes. As soon as you have a Social Security number and you go over to Motor Voter, pass the driver's test, you get a driver's license. The person looks, you got a social, you must be a citizen. That's how they pack the rolls. By the way, those guys don't pay taxes anyway. It's taken out by companies. Our government's been sitting on $1.7 trillion slush fund that one fund has still in it to this day.
So Mike Johnson's Twitter account posted these items, three of which are milquetoast okay, the other of which aren't going to do anything. Not that it's going to pass, because I don't think Speaker Johnson's willing to attach it to legislation that Democrats deem must pass, and because the Democrats intend to steal this election. Listen to Mike Johnson describe just how impactful a few illegal alien voters would be on an election.
We now have so many non-citizens in the country that if only 1 out of 100 of those voted, they would cast hundreds of thousands of votes. If a nefarious actor wants to intervene in our elections, all they have to do is check a box on a form and sign their name. That's it. That's all that's required.
And if he was serious about this, he'd attach it to must-pass legislation. Speaker Johnson. Speaker. Thou shalt not steal. Or allow others to steal. This is Fox News' Jess Waters explaining how easy it is for illegal aliens to vote in the next election and to be legally protected.
Illegals voting? Democrats told us that's impossible. But there are no federal requirements for states to verify citizenship of voters before they register. Republicans introduced a bill that would change that. If you want to vote, prove you're a citizen first. But Democrats are going to kill it in the Senate. They say it's already illegal for migrants to vote, so who cares? So, let's see what happens if an illegal votes. They'll get arrested and deported, right? Not exactly. There's a massive loophole. Title 18, U.S. Code 611, makes it a felony for non-citizens to vote in federal elections unless the alien reasonably believed at the time of voting that he or she was a citizen of the United States. That means if a Biden migrant votes, gets arrested, and their lawyer says, Biden granted Jose asylum, he thought he could vote. Jose gets off scot-free. In New York State, for example, you can register to vote without an ID, without a Social Security number, as long as you have a utility bill or a paycheck or a government housing slip. And remember, if they get caught, oops, I didn't know it was illegal, charges dropped. And who's really trying to catch them anyway? And what are they going to catch them after the election? Biden let 10 million illegal aliens into this country. How are we ever going to accept the results of this election in this kind of landscape?
In this kind of landscape. The landscape Jess Waters mentions, and I appreciate his reporting, is this. It's designed to allow fraud. The entire election system in at least half the states is created specifically to hide fraud and to make it easy to participate in. I pray that Mike Johnson will really consider his love for Jesus, which is evident. It's self-evident. I see the fruits of it. I beg him to go to his knees and ask, shouldn't he block anything the Democrats want until they agree to not steal the election by installing even more firm tactics than what's in the SAVE Act? We'll come back on The Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. appreciate you listening to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. Coming up, we'll get to the Tower of Babbling. Whoopi Goldberg did a Whoopi Goldberg thing, and a bit of irony, or I don't even know if it's irony. It's not. It's hypocrisy. This funny thing, you remember back when the people who run Joe Biden fired special forces, soldiers, colonels, others for refusing to disclose their private medical affairs or refusing to get an injection? Weird thing happened when reporters began to ask the spokeslier for the White House, hey, about that Parkinson's expert, we'll also play for you, that people wanted to hear this again. I pledged you it's real. It is a video running in Europe that's designed to teach migrant men to not rape women. Wait till you hear it. And if you want, if you email me, go to thetoddhermanshow.com, email me. I'll send you a link to this. It's not an obscene video. It's poorly done, but it's done so on purpose. So that's all coming up in the Tower of Babbling. I once had this occasion to speak with a doctor about COVID. Rather, he was speaking to me about COVID. And we talked about the injections, the nature of them. And as I was describing to him my concern, I happened to mention something called mechanism of harm. And as I mentioned the mechanism of harm and my concern about the injections, I said this. My concern from the beginning was that given the nature of the design of the injections, which did encourage, cause the genes to produce a facsimile of the native spike protein native to the COVID-19 virus, that inducing the genes to produce that, my concern was always that would be a point of confusion for the immune system and could create a whole series of mechanisms of harm, such as cytokine storms, an overreaction of the immune system, such as the body attacking itself. And if these spike protein varieties were to launch themselves into areas like the testes or the brain, that in fact the body could become confused and attack those areas of the body. And it was just an interesting discussion in an airport. And the doctor said to me, where did you get your degree? I said, my what? He goes, your medical degree. Where'd you go to medical school? Oh, I didn't go to medical school. Well, wait, we're talking about mechanism of harm. And I'm sorry, what degree do you have? I said, I don't. I'm a college dropout. I dropped out of community college for 1 year of football. Wow. You must have really read some things. And I said, you know, Doc, in all honesty, and you know, and I told him in the airport, I said, there's no doubt in my mind that you yesterday forgot more about the detailed workings of the human body than I'll ever know or frankly am capable of knowing. I have no doubt of that. But this isn't hard. You cause the body to produce something harmful to the body, it's going to confuse the body. It's not hard. It's not difficult once you understand that these injections were designed to force the genes of the body to produce something, that the effects of the injection are not staying at the injection site. It was easy to know that was a lie. The moment I understood it caused the genes to do something, of course it's not going to stay at the point of the injection. This isn't hard. And he said something that saddened me to this day. He said, I wish more of my colleagues understood that. I said, wait, do you actually think that they don't understand this? He goes, I actually do. He was an older doctor in his 60s to 70s. I didn't ask who he was, but he was an older doctor. And he said, the young physicians do not understand how to think. Not skeptically. Young physicians have been taught to find out what pill to put you on, what prescription to give you for life so that you're on these pills for life, what surgery to require. And I said, okay, yeah, I get that. I've heard that. It's very sad. And do you know about claim mining? He goes, claim mining, what's that? I said, Amazon and Google are buying small medical centers for good money. And what they do when they buy the medical centers is they pay the docs off and they write them a contract to stay. And then they install systems to claim mine. And this is what it means. It's like gold mining. If you come into the doctor's office for, let's say, a yearly checkup, the doctor is going to take your age, and if you're on Medicare, Medicaid, or on any form of insurance that they have access to, they're going to go behind the scenes, run an algorithm, and come back into the room when they visit with you and say, by the way, did you know that you qualify for free statins? Have you ever thought of going on statins? You know, they'll protect you against blood sugar or blood pressure issues. You should try statins. Or did you know that you qualify for this, that, or that drug? They're going to push it. Claim mining is gold mining. And he knew about looking through claim books and trying to find things that could be covered, but he didn't know that Amazon and Google were going to be doing that. And they are going to be doing that. So are a lot of other big tech companies. I bring this up because the modified RNA injections, which the bosses of the world pretended were vaccines, are in all likelihood continuing to kill people.
For three consecutive years, that's 2020, 2021, and 2022, Canada is up in terms of excess deaths by 1,000 deaths per week, right? So 1,000 more Canadians dying every week now than pre-COVID-19. So to me, the topic is, why are Canadians dying in greater numbers? Why are Canadians less healthy now than we were pre-COVID-19? And I think we need to get all scientists at the table to have those discussions. Now, I will point out this includes 2020, which was before the rollout of the COVID-19 shots, right? That's why I say to me, this involves bad science, period, right? If it's the virus, that's likely the result of bad science due to gain of function research, something that should never have happened, right? And people need to be held to account for that. Also, it's bad science that it wasn't contained in the laboratory where it was supposed to be contained. Either way, there is bad science involved here, and Canadians have been impacted.
That's Dr. Brian Brittle. And maybe it could help with something. 2020 is the edge of that growth. It began to show itself. Certainly COVID, which was in almost all likelihood, you paid to have the Chinese Communist Party create in their lab. Tony Fauci laundered money blatantly illegally to get that done in all likelihood. That stuff was used to kill people. Let me be clear, was used to kill people. The average age of death of a COVID death was around the age of 86 with six comorbid factors. Six. The deaths that were unexpected that wouldn't have happened given these respiratory viruses were people who were put on ventilators when they shouldn't have been and their lungs were blown out. Why were they put on ventilators? Because hospitals were paid to do that. Why were they given the same drug mix that you would give an end-stage hospice patient? Because they were paid to do that. Why were they given remdesivir, which was known to be poisonous to the kidneys and to lead to death in all too many cases? Because they were paid to do that. Some of the other deaths were deaths of despair. You take an old person who's 82 years old, you say, hey, you've got the COVID and you can't go near a person. You can't touch your grandkids. You can't touch your children. They know they're 82. They know that life is going to end, sooner rather than later. You had deaths of despair. And then when the COVID shots were introduced, that's where you see the hockey stick in deaths. And we're going to continue to see it because the COVID shots are passed on generation to generation. Not the shots, but the effects of the shots. If there is not a worldwide tribunal that puts people like Fauci and Robert Redfield, who's done what he can to try to come around and be a decent guy again, Francis Collins, the fake evangelical Christian who loves abortion, Debbie Birx, and I include in that Bill Gates and people at the World Health Organization. If there's not a worldwide tribunal to charge these people with massive human rights crimes, then there is no earthly justice, which means we can rejoice. I mean, we would want earthly justice, but there is going to be godly justice. It has already been meted out. When the Lord promises a thing, it has been done. The people who did this and don't repent have already faced justice. They just don't know it. Bathsheba Vandenberg, a lawyer, reminds the world what Pfizer did.
Clinical data itself, it reported that there was 270 women, actually 274 women that had unanticipated pregnancies. And that means that they weren't actually part of the clinical trial themselves. They just had unanticipated pregnancies. And that out of the 274, and they said that four were fetus cases, so if we look at actually 270 is actually the figure, that 238 outcomes were unknown. So they didn't know what happened to 238 pregnancies, but they did know out of the 32, and 31 had died. 31 babies had died out of 32. That's a 97% fatality rate during the Pfizer clinical trials. Now, Detective Gruce, while she was testifying, she's sitting there in front of me, facing me, and she's stating simply that, 31 out of 32. And as she was stating that, the hearing officer lurched forward and said, "Stop," as she was stating that information. And she just went like this. And I'll never forget that image.
Demanding that the lady stop looking like this. There's many images I'll never forget. The one that that haunts me to this day is, remember the Glove of Love? Do you remember this? No, this, people won awards for this. Nurses who had participated in trapping old people into deathbeds that they didn't need to be in for fear that the old people would kill children with COVID, which never happened, not one single time. Since these people were locked into solitary confinement, dying in these lonely, desperately scared ways, they took hot water and they took medical gloves and filled them with hot water and then placed them on top of the hands of the dying person so that they could be comforted with a balloon filled with water, because that's like a human hand. It's not just the COVID shots. More people are asking why the CDC doesn't want infants trying more than like five foods before age two or so, but they demand shooting them up with 84 shots. Ari Siri explains.
Unfortunately for vaccines, it's the only product I'm aware of where it is the government with DOJ attorneys defend the company, the product, against the consumers claiming injury in the vaccine injury compensation program. I heard earlier somebody say that the VICP, the vaccine injury compensation program, errs on the side of compensation. We have 15 folks at our firm that practice that program. I can assure you that is not the case. And to your point about providing immunity protection, leading up to 1986, there were only three routine vaccines in the United States totaling seven injections. That's it. That's on the CDC schedule. Three routine, seven total injections. There are currently, by the way, 19 vaccines on the CDC schedule, totaling 84 injections if you count COVID vaccine now given annually. With that said, leading up to 86, the amount of liability from those three products, which were DTP, OPV, and MMR, were so great that every manufacturer went out of business or stopped making them, so there's only one manufacturer left. Congress decided, instead of forcing what companies always have to do, make a better, safer product. Instead, it passed the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act that said you can keep selling your product even though it causes harm. You don't need to make a better and safer product. But the original sin wasn't just that. It was that it also gave them immunity for any product going forward. And I pointed out, I think, the differential I think that has caused in how clinical trials are conducted, how regulatory agencies treat these products. They really view themselves as partners with the manufacturers.
Well, no, the CDC is a pharmaceutical company. Its scientists take a percentage of patents. The FDA is a pharmaceutical company. 40% of its funding comes from pharma. Call things what they are. Thou shalt not lie. President Trump recorded a video where he purports to be ready to take on Big Pharma.
In recent decades, there has been an unexplained and alarming growth in the prevalence of chronic illnesses and health problems, especially in children. We've seen a stunning rise in autism, autoimmune disorders, obesity, infertility, serious allergies, and respiratory challenges. Every year we spend hundreds of billions of dollars to treat these chronic problems rather than looking at what is causing them in the first place. Too often our public health establishment is too close to big pharma, big corporations, and other special interests, and does not want to ask the tough questions about what is happening to our children's health. If big pharma defrauds American patients and taxpayers or puts profits above people, they must be investigated and held accountable.
I want to believe this. I want to believe President Trump is ready to do this. And I remember when President Trump brought the bosses of Johnson & Johnson to one of his campaign rallies and bragged about the amount of money they make. They make a lot of money, a lot of money. President Trump's crowd booed. One of the few times I've heard, and I don't know that they were booing President Trump. The people who go to his rallies are fiercely loyal to the president. I think they were booing the Johnson & Johnson executives, which is interesting given that the Johnson & Johnson so-called vaccine was the least harmful of the three. And it was the one the government decided to shut down. Everybody should question the motives. It's not just corruption. It's not just that they've bought off. That's too easy. Everyone should question the motive for continuing to push into the veins of kids drugs that we know are harmful. We'll come back with the Tower Babbling. I'm Todd Herman. This is A Disciple's View. Appreciate you listening to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. I messed up earlier. I was looking at the wrong show notes. I gave the wrong tease. There I was doing my job, teasing the next segment. I looked at the wrong document. That was a tease for coming up. Well, do this Disciples View on Friday. We're just putting that together. You know what? It's funny. The more that I talk about the figurehead Biden having perhaps Parkinson's or Alzheimer's, definitely dementia. It's either more often I'm noticing my own screw-ups or God is saying, you know, bud, you're not praying for Biden. And I know I make that a theme. It happened to me this morning. I was praying over a relationship that's ending, a marriage. A friend of mine's marriage is ending, and I'm praying about this. And I thought, oh, I need to pray for the figurehead. And I got so invested in praying for my friend that I forgot to pray for the figurehead. Here I am now looking at the wrong show notes, but we'll make it up to you. I promise we'll get to the actual correct Tower Babbling. Senator J.D. Vance just, well, to be colloquial, wrecked NBC News on the topic of one of the many show trials against President Trump.
Well, Kristen, first of all, you said that it happens all the time, that the number three person in the Department of Justice jumps ship to join a local prosecutor's office to go after the president's political opponent. I don't think that's ever happened in the history of American democracy, and I don't think that we should legitimize it. Now, if Donald Trump's attorney general had his number two or his number three jump ship to a local prosecutor's office in Ohio or Wisconsin, and that person then went after Donald Trump's political opposition, that's a different conversation.
Senator,
all he's suggesting is that we should investigate credible arguments of wrongdoing. That's all that Donald Trump is saying. That is not a threat to democracy. That's merely reinforcing our system of law and government.
Well said. And fact of the matter is this. When a guy leaves a post like that at the DOJ, which is a guaranteed massive retirement, board seats, money, family members never need to work again, connections you will monetize for the rest of your life if you choose to go to a local prosecutor's office, there is a payoff. Perhaps he's just a true believer. Perhaps he just wants to destroy Donald Trump. Well, you know who's easy to pay off to do things? True believers. I hate to say that, but it is a fact. I was just chatting with a friend of mine, Michael Rourke. Mike is a retired special forces operative and an international security consultant who has turned his considerable intellect and skill base to America. No longer focusing on international work. He's availed me of information that shows that Hamas and ISIS-type groups are bragging about the number of American young people they have activated to go out and protest on behalf of Hamas, and bragging about the radicalization of these young people. They're doing this because when you turn someone into a true believer and you continue to praise, look, you're changing the world, you're changing the world, particularly young people who haven't been given the gift of God. I mean, they have the gift. I shouldn't say it that way. But that's been stolen from them by the world. They've allowed the world to steal their godliness or their access to God. They could take it back anytime they want. They could pray and God's with them. But when they've never been told that you are greater than you are because you're created by God, because you could be the body of Christ, because of who God made you to be, they're willing to fall for these things. Just as this prosecutor about whom J.D. Vance spoke may well be that true believer, but hey, money can come with it. Money can come with it. On this program, we thank the Lord for placing supposedly wise people on tall towers of shaking sand with our feature called The Tower of Babbling.
You know about the biblical truth of the Tower of Babel. A Disciple's View presents...
And there's a lot of other... For example, the idea that we're, in terms of taxes, that they refuse to... For example, I was able to balance the budget and pass everything from the global warming bill anyway.
The Tower of Babbling.
Three sound bites that I think prove my thesis about what God does with these people. The eloquence, the use of words, the sophisticated rhetoric, the thoughtful commentary and analysis. The only sort of presentation that can only be made capable or possible by a robust, diligent focus on the English language and the art of persuasion, the study of phraseology, the obsessive living of rehearsal after rehearsal to make a point cogent and clear, logical, that will stand the test of time. I'm so impressed by that. And then, on the other hand, meet Becky Pringle, National Education Association President.
NEA delegates, we can do this work. We must do this work. We get to do this work. We will do this work because our students are depending on us to win all the things.
And she, by the way, goes on to say all the things. We got to win all the things and all the things. And I didn't choose to abuse you that way because it goes on for almost a minute. And again, she's the president of the National Education Association. Let's recall together Tony Fauci in clip two. Here, Tony Fauci pretends he can't hear, doesn't remember, cannot recall, and as well, never been to Washington, D.C.
I have no recollection. I'm sorry, would you repeat the question? What's the question again? I'm not sure. I don't recall anything from that phone call. You know, I don't recall. I may have, but I don't recall. I don't specifically remember.
Do you recall that?
I don't recall.
Doesn't recall much. Trick of the trade, by the way, if you are in court against someone and they don't recall, but you do, you can often win the argument. This is prideful. This is really a prideful statement. God forgive me. I would pay a lot of money to question Tony Fauci. I firmly believe that God has given me a skill set that I think I could really, really harm Fauci rhetorically. And because I'm obsessed with the COVID stuff, I admit it, I'm obsessed with it. Last soundbite in today's Tower Babbling. This is 22-year-old Sam Carling. He just became the youngest politician in the House of Commons for the far-left Labour Party.
I always get a little bit frustrated when people mention life experience because no one has yet been able to explain to me why being older makes you better at the job.
Well, you've got more experience, I think that's why.
But what kind of experience?
Well, by definition, over the years, you gain more experiences, don't you?
But what kind of experience, right?
What life experience?
No one's been able to... Well, we're going around in a circle there, aren't we?
No one's been able to prove to him or to demonstrate that what he said was being older makes you better at the job. That wasn't the contention, of course. The contention was that experience matters. I will always, always, always honor the sort of experience I've seen in men who learned to work in the old way. I love this. I love watching it. I'll tell you about two of those stories here in a second, right after I say, that's a wrap for today's Tower of Babbling.
That was the Tower of Babbling.
A silent mouth is sweet to hear.
On A Disciple's View.
The hard-earned experience that this young man contends to not be able to see, and I think in his youthful arrogance, he probably doesn't see it. I mean, some of that experience can be interpersonal relations, knowing when someone's lying. I'll never forget being at a lunch with a business partner in Washington, D.C., when I was the chief digital strategist at the RNC. We were at lunch, and I really like this guy, still friends with him. But we were eating lunch, and they were a vendor, we let them buy lunch. And I said, so, hey, are we going to launch this app on time? And Danny looked at me and said, yep, absolutely. I said, Danny, don't lie to me. How far behind are we? And he got pale in the face. He said, probably a month. Okay, so we're not going to go on time. No. All right, don't lie to me. I want to be friends. I want to do business with people that I'm friends with. And just don't do that. Okay, I apologize. I was nervous. I'll never do that again. By the way, how'd you know I was lying? I go, I'm not going to tell you. But man, please never, ever go out and play poker. Please never do that. Experience in human relations. Experience in human psychology. And experience watching theorists be confronted with reality. I was in Microsoft, and I purchased one of the first smartphones. I didn't purchase. I had it shipped and gave them to my team, so I didn't have to buy it. And I'd signed up with Verizon to provide the service, and the thing would not sync. No matter what, I couldn't get it to sync. And back in the day, you had to sync your phone. So that would sync up your email. So your email is the same on your desktop as your phone and your settings. It was this funky, funky thing back before there was enough bandwidth to push down the updates. And so I finally got in touch with someone at the Windows Mobile team. And this guy came by and he walked in. And he goes, okay, you got to be screwing something up. All due respect, we've never seen this problem. I go, oh, be my guest. And he sat down and said, okay, it's this simple. And then he said, oh, wait. He spent, to his credit, about 6 hours in my office getting this working. And he finally, yes, I got it. I got it. I got it. I knew it. Okay, now your device works. We're really excited about these devices. And I said, can I just ask a question? He goes, yeah. I go, you came here after 4 or 5 emails I sent, and I had to find you in the org chart and sort of convince you to come by. He goes, yeah, but I did it. I said, yes, thank you. I'm very thankful. What do our customers do? Oh, well, they've got a helpline that's going to be with them for 6 hours? Oh, see, he was a theorist. He was a coder. And then he sat there in the room with someone who was trying to use his device. I mentioned having love for people who gain knowledge the old way. My father raised me around race cars. And I began to drive race cars when I was 7 years old, quarter midgets, which very quickly became half midgets. Wonderful time. We were in Colorado Springs, Colorado. And I was having a problem with my car. This was at Nationals 1 year. I was having a problem with my car. It just, no matter what we did with the spark plug gaps, everything, it wasn't running right. And a gentleman who had been at the game a lot longer, even than my dad, came over. My dad had been at it a long time. He came over and my car, little quarter midget, half midget, was up on blocks. And this man took the fuel line and took it off the bottom of the gas tank and leaned over and sipped the fuel. And as he was swishing around his mouth, he reconnected the fuel line, spat it out. He goes, there's water in it. Because you got water in your gas tank. He knew this by swishing it around. Now, maybe that doesn't sound that impressive. But to me, that's this hard-earned knowledge. that somehow been lost in the so-called information economy. You watch. There is a saying that my friends in North Idaho in this area say, which is this. They say, everybody hates a redneck until their truck breaks down. True thing. Someone's going to need guys like that when, God forbid, though I do think it will happen, we have a massive, massive, massive outage in America of electricity. I do think that day will come. That hard-earned knowledge is sometimes just beautiful to behold. There was a friend of mine who is a great genius at fixing things. Although it's funny because wasn't the least bit mechanical growing up. He's just, God has gifted him with the ability to look at a device and see how it works. He rebuilt his own Jaguar engine because he was done paying people to do it. He said, I'm taking it over. I'm just going to rebuild my own engines. Never, ever worked on a car in his life, did it successfully. He could not fix his furnace. And it drove Matthew nuts. Couldn't fix it. Finally, he called the people who had been the one family who owned his home before he did. They lived in it for 40-some years. He got in touch with them and said, hey, who worked on your furnace? Oh, it's this guy. And they found the card. And he called that gentleman. The gentleman came out, and Matthew did talk to him, 78 years old. And he still came out as a favor. He walked into the house, and Matthew greeted him and said, you want to go see the furnace? He goes, no. Is there a vent? He goes, I'm an old man. I don't want to have to lean down. Is there a vent that's higher on the walls? Matthew goes, okay, the kitchen, here. Went in, took this vent off the wall, and he did have to kneel down a bit, but he was able to use a chair, and he went, oh, I know it's wrong. With the sense of smell, he knew what was wrong. He went downstairs to the furnace. He took out some tools. He went right and said, yeah, see, it's this little belt. Yeah, you're not going to find this. It's back here, but yeah, it's frozen. That's why you're not getting any furnace. I can replace this for you, but I'm going to have to go have you buy the belt. It'll cost you about $6. God blesses us in such unique ways, and I regret that in our society, people who can do those things aren't often enough praised. If you are one of those people, understand something. I marvel at your intelligence. I love it, and I marvel at it. In the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Because we believe, we speak, because He first loved us, we speak His Word. We walk in the path of Jesus Christ and make disciples of all nations. Until God decides you and I can speak again together, may His peace, which transcends all understanding, wash over you and your families. On behalf of AFR and Randy, I'm Todd Herman, and this has been A Disciple's View.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.